Welcome to Steve Dale's Pet World.
You don't have a better bad idea than this?
This is the best bad idea we have, sir.
If you've got pets, he's got answers.
You are a sad, strange little man.
Steve can help. We're positive.
Oh, God, this thing is going downhill fast.
You've got America's pet expert here on Steve Dale's Pet World.
Good morning, Steve Dale right here, and as promised, we have some email questions in my hand. Yeah, you can email steve@stevedale.tv. You can reach me that way, and we will answer your questions on Sunday mornings. And I will talk about, yes, again, Michael Vick. I will keep talking about that until the National Football League pays attention to what I and millions of others have to say. And right now, Roger Goodell, the commissioner of the National Football League, is for some reason saying, we don't care what Steve Dale or millions of people have to say. And I have a comment on that as well. But first on the telephone, Dr. Drew Wagner, president of the Wynn Feline Foundation, here to answer cat question number one from Kelly. So you ready here, Dr. Wagner?
I am, Steve.
You don't get an introduction like that every day, do you?
No, that's the best introduction I've ever had.
And Dr. Wagner is a feline practitioner in Atlanta and well-suited to answer this question. So, Steve, should I be concerned about adopting two kittens, one with Khaleesi virus? And you'll explain what that is, Dr. Wagner. We want to give these cats a good home, but don't want to be heartbroken. What do you think?
Well, you know, it's a fairly common problem in cats, particularly from shelters. These are upper respiratory infections. Khaleesi virus is one of them. And it can be a fairly serious disease, but in most cats, it's not. Most cats, they get a cold, and it can be a fairly severe cold, and although in some cases, it's not much of a big deal. It's very rare for it to cause any serious problems, but it can. Your question is not unfounded. They do make vaccines for Khaleesi virus, and so it's very important to keep your cats vaccinated for this disease. And that does help with the symptoms and, to some degree, the transmission. But it's usually a fairly treatable, mild upper respiratory infection. And for most cats, it's not going to be that much of a problem.
So it's kind of like us getting the common cold. But the thing about the common cold is, if you come and visit my house, and I've got that common cold, now you've got the common cold.
Exactly. And then the vaccine, unfortunately, is not 100% effective, and so it isn't a guarantee that another cat couldn't get this. But again, this is not something that we see causing that serious symptoms. Again, it's a cold, it's an annoyance, and generally speaking, it goes away with a fairly simple treatment in most cases.
All right, and I mentioned you're the president. Thank you. You're the president of the Wynn Feline Foundation. What is the Wynn Feline Foundation?
Well, the Wynn Feline Foundation has been around for a little over half a century, 51 years, and it is the largest source of funding for feline research in the world.
Yeah, that's pretty impressive. And just in the past couple of years, significant gains in feline health have been made by funding various projects because of the Wynn Feline Foundation.
That's absolutely true. In fact, a lot of the breakthroughs in feline medicine over the last 50 years have been funded by research from Wynn.
Mm-hmm. So one example would be feline infectious peritonitis, or FIP. There was just a huge symposium held. The day before the symposium, FIP, if you'd look anywhere, fatal. The day after the symposium, or the day of, treatable, right?
Absolutely. In fact, this has been considered 100% fatal disease up until very recently. Some of the interesting breakthrough research funded by Wynn has provided some treatment.
Yeah,
it would be a cure.
Say that again?
In fact, some of these treatments may, in fact, be a cure. Some of the cats that were originally treated years ago with these compounds are still alive.
Yeah, so you broke up, which is why I said say it again. But even if you said it, I'd say it again, because it's so amazing. I mean, did you ever think when you began as a veterinarian, what was it, 7,000 years ago, that the disease called feline infectious peritonitis would ever be considered treatable?
No, in fact, you know, the first jobs I ever had as a teenager at a veterinary clinic, we saw several cats dying of FIP, some of which related to their early vaccines, which could actually cause the disease. So it's been one of the most devastating diseases in feline medicine. And again, it's been considered fatal until really just a few months ago now.
Yeah. Look, you can learn.
The news is out.
You can learn more about all of this at WINN, W-I-N-N, felinefoundation.org. Dr. Wagner, always a pleasure to talk to you. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Steve. It's good to talk to you again.
Thank you. And I have one more question here that I want to read. Steve, I'm looking for someone to help me train my Bengal cat. Here are the issues I'm experiencing. And there are several here. Meows like a siren nonstop until he eats. He needs leash training, sometimes attacks my older cat, and eats clothing and paper when hungry. I'll go through each of these. And it sounds like ultimately at the end of the day, you need some hands-on help from either a veterinary behaviorist or a veterinary technician boarded in behavior, or someone like me, a certified animal behavior consultant or a certified cat behavior consultant. Now, the part about meows like a siren nonstop until he eats, Bengal cats are notoriously smart, and it sounds like this cat has actually trained you. Okay, if I do this, I get the food, and it began, meow. Then it became, meow. Then it became, or however, I'm probably not doing a very good impersonation of a Bengal cat, but probably the cat has your number down. So I would say feed the cat when you want to feed the cat and just ignore. But there's a certain percent of food that I would leave out all the time for a long list of reasons. One is to keep the cat occupied, which will help with some of these other issues. So if you leave out the food, and there are all sorts of products that you could buy online at pet stores now that are little food dispensers for cats. So you put these in different places around the house, maybe 20% of the cat's food, and put a lot of them in different places so the cats don't fight over them. We've already got cats that aren't getting along from what you've said, right? So what we want to do is put 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 of these little dispensers of food. If you feed moist food, you could just do the same idea and take the top. You know, when you open the food, the moist food can, and you keep it fresh, there's a little plastic top that you put. Just take that top, put it upside down, put a spoon or 2 spoons of moist food in it, and same thing, put it in different places around the house. That way, your indoor Bengal cat and your other cat can, quote, hunt for the food when you're not looking, when you're not around, and when the cat is just simply hungry. And maybe the cat then won't look to you so much for getting that hunger solved, but rather, okay, I've got to find the food. Giving that cat something else to do, which is beneficial for many other reasons. Maybe not so focused on attacking the older cat. There's a product called Feel-Away Multicat. So Feel-Away lowers the anxiety that cats have, and this is a fraction of a pheromone that will lower the anxiety that this cat has about the other cat. Now, if the cats are truly fighting all the time, or you're concerned that one is going to get hurt or that the situation is worsening, bring in hands-on help, the professional help, that can tell you how to deal with this. But in the meantime, I definitely would separate the cats, because being left together, the problem actually just worsens over time. And I also don't want one cat to need to see a veterinarian because the cats are fighting all the time. About eating the clothing and paper, well, that's a concern because the cat can get a blockage from. So it's one thing to chew on this stuff, and that can be annoying. It's another thing if your cat is actually ingesting clothing or even paper. Because what that can cause is an emergency visit to the veterinarian. And you don't want that. So another reason, you said, the way you put it, eats clothing and paper when hungry. So again, another reason to leave food out all the time in different places around the house. Now, about the leash training. Bengals, I don't know where you live. Maybe not a good time. If it's 40 below zero, to take a Bengal cat or any cat outside to begin this project, but it should begin indoors anyway. So you take the leash and the harness and associate it with something really good. You just take it out, the leash and harness, and then offer some treats. The leash is there. Cat gets treats. Then the leash and harness go on the cat ever so briefly. As you're putting it on, you can get help from someone if you can to do this. As you put it on gradually, treats, treats, treats. So every time the cat literally sees the leash and harness, the cat gets treats. So no matter what time of year it is, this kind of thing should be started indoors. And then take the cat for a walk. Ultimately, once the cat accepts the leash and harness, and maybe you go quickly. With some cats, that happens after, I've got it down, three times. You know, cat leash and harness comes out. Cat gets treats. I've done it three times. The cat's got the idea and loves it. Others, it can take a month or two. It just depends on the individual cat and on your ability to associate that leash and harness with something good. If the cat is associating the leash and harness in a positive way, then begin to walk the cat around the house with the leash and harness on. Give the cat a tour of your own house and give some treats to the cat all along the way. Again, associating all of that with something good. For that hands-on professional I spoke about, check out the International Association of Animal Behavior Consultants. That's IAABC.org. Or think about a veterinary behaviorist, and that would be DACVB.org, Diplomates of the American College of Veterinary Behaviorists. Again, a reminder, you can email me your questions, steve@stevedale.tv. Check out my website, same, stevedale.tv, and I've written a lot about this when I filled in, and I'm honored to say I did this for RoCon a couple of weeks ago. I had on the show Wayne Pacelli of the Humane Society of the United States. Now, I'll explain why that ties in to Michael Vick in a moment if you don't happen to know. So, of course, Michael Vick was eventually convicted for dogfighting. No, actually, he wasn't. That's what most people think. He was convicted for a lesser felony of racketeering. So when it all first started, and you can hear a podcast at WGNradio.com or go to my website and look for that podcast of my interview with Wayne Pacelli, where we talk about how this all began. Vic first said, I had nothing to do with it. I don't know anything. This guy, yeah, I know him. I didn't know he was dogfighting. Then he said, well, I kind of knew they were dogfighting, but I had very little to do with it. Then he said, well, I might have had something to do with it. After all, Bad News Kennels, as it was called, that's my place. I know I paid the rent on it, but nevertheless, or the mortgage, I don't know which, but nevertheless, I didn't fight dogs. But eventually it came out that Vic himself, personally, with his own two hands, was involved. And what wasn't involved, he did himself. He did horrific things to these poor defenseless animals. Things that they're really unspeakable. And I am not going to graphically on the radio explain what he did. You can Google, or you could read some of it. Some of it. I didn't even put it all in the stories that I've written. So eventually he said, yes, I did these things. When he took a lie detector test, it showed that he did do these things. But all along the way, he lied to federal investigators. That's against the law. He was never prosecuted for that. He was never prosecuted for the horrible things that he did to dogs personally. And he was never prosecuted for drug charges, which were a part of all this too. Instead, he was prosecuted and went to jail eventually for racketeering, and that is the transfer of dogs from state to state. That's a felony, but that's it. You know, so he got away easy in a sense. He comes out of jail early and serves the rest of his sentence at his palatial estate. And that's fine. He served his time and all that. And at the point he was convicted, Roger Goodell, the commissioner of the National Football League, said, you know, it's unlikely that he would ever play in the NFL again. But I believe that Vic thought otherwise. He contacted humane organizations, including his people did. He didn't. The Humane Society of the United States. They, at that time, had a great program, an anti-dogfighting campaign. And Wayne Pacelli was the president and CEO of the Humane Society of the United States, or the HSUS. Well, Pacelli ended up going on tour with Vic. And I talked to Pacelli about how contrite Vic was or was not, whether Vic really apologized or not. You could hear it all. Again, it's at WGNRadio.com or my website, SteveDale.tv. What does Pacelli think after dozens of cities going into inner cities to spread the message that was an appropriate message, anti-dogfighting? No doubt about that. What was Vic's goal? Well, I happen to know because I was on the board of the American Humane Association at that time that he also came to the American Humane Association, or again, Vic's people came to the American Humane Association, and they really wanted to set up a bidding war. Who would get Michael Vick, American Humane or HSUS? Well, American Humane, and as I recall, our board unanimously said no. I know we said no. I think it was unanimous. In any case, HSUS, Pacelli feels differently, and Wayne goes out on the road because he felt, and he explains it better than I can here, that this was a learning moment or opportunity, not only to reach children primarily in these neighborhoods, because Vic, even then, after his conviction, was considered a hero, and he could make a difference. And certainly the publicity helped to enact some laws regarding dogfighting. There's no doubt about that. But what was Vic's real motivation? I argue his motivation, Vic, I have no proof of this, and Wayne doesn't know one way or the other, but I argue all along he was thinking, how can I resurrect my image, or his people planned out? How could Vic resurrect his image so he can make a lot of money again and return to the National Football League? Which he did. It worked. So the commissioner of the National Football League said, he's cured, he's fixed, he's a new man, and maybe, I don't know, but allowed him to play football again. His first year back was a great year. But every other year following that, you know, he's now older, he missed time not playing, and I think it was 3 years he continued to play after that and then finally retired. And every year after that, he was, you know, average or about, maybe a little better. Wasn't a superstar for several years in his career? Absolutely. And I'm not a football expert. So Kevin Powell of this radio station of WGN, who is a football expert, said, you know, I can't figure it out because there are players that I think had better careers overall. Their career was not interrupted by jail time. Why did Roger Goodell choose Michael Vick? I can't say, he says. And I can't either. What's more, millions now, not 50 people, millions of people have signed a variety of petitions online. The National Football League is well aware of the pushback from the general public. It's one thing to say, okay, we kind of forgive him. It's one thing to say we'll watch him or we won't watch him on Fox Sports where he's now a commentator. But to represent the National Football League and to put him on this pedestal as honorary captain when there are so many other choices, individuals who might have had better careers and certainly did not fight dogs, in fact, may have done wonderful things off the field, why choose this guy? And the NFL commissioner kind of doesn't answer that, but what he has said, what Roger Goodell has said, essentially is we don't care what all of you millions of people think. So my response is, well, we don't care about you, Roger Goodell, maybe. We don't care about the Pro Bowl, maybe. We don't even care about watching the National Football League anymore. And that's the camp that I'm in. So let me take one more email question. Dear Steve, my dog barks at the door even though I know there is no one on the other side of that door. What do I do? It's from Carrie in Skokie. So Carrie in Skokie, I don't know that you, if you live in a townhouse, if you live in an apartment, if you live in a condo, if you live in a home, a single family home. And the answer is somewhat dependent, because if you live in an apartment or condo, I wonder, yeah, sure, there's no one at the door, but maybe the elevator down the hall opened, or maybe someone down the hall opened their door or knocked on that door. So maybe there's an explanation that makes at least some sense, but I'll still tell you what you can do about it. You know, most of us don't want our dogs not to bark at the door. We want our dogs to tell us, hey, somebody's there. What we don't want is for them to keep barking and barking and barking and barking. So what I would do is allow your dog to bark. You might even say, good job, after you make up the number, three barks, four barks, whatever it is, and then call your dog to you excitingly. You know, come here, Fido. That's probably not your dog's name, but come here. And then give your dog, ask your dog to sit, have your dog do something else, and then give your dog a treat. I bet, or your money back, that that will work. You can email me your questions. It's a way to talk to me, if you will. That is steve@stevedale.tv. Next week, I'll pull another question or two, and we will answer more email questions.